League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
WTF1 presents Hot Takes Wednesday.
Welcome back to another edition of Hot Takes Wednesday. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us after a pretty damn good United States Grand Prix. I actually really enjoyed that race. Good tactical fight all the way to the end. And of course, a lot of stuff in it that I'm sure got you guys hot takes flowing. Good you could join us as ever. And I've got another great guest alongside me on this week's edition of the show. Joining me, you might know her from TikTok and from the WTF1 talent pool. You probably know her as Ellie Prophet. Hello, Ellie. Good to see you.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me on. Excited to be here.
Excited to have you. How did you find that US Grand Prix then? Pretty good going, right?
Very action-packed, and obviously we're going to get into it today, but disqualifications, track limits, all going on, super exciting, so can't wait to unpack and talk about it.
Yeah, me and me both, looking forward to it indeed. So, because every podcast is somebody's first, a quick explanation of the rules and regs around here. Remember that, it becomes important later, talking about rules and regulations. You, the fine WTF1 audience, send in your takes. You can do so on Twitter at WTF1Official. Look out for the Hot Takes Wednesday post on there on a Monday morning. You can send your tweets in via there. You can DM me on Instagram. Yes, my DMs are open at DreHarrisonWTF1. You can DM me on there with your takes. Thanks for the very kind words regarding that as well. I see you guys in there. I read every message, I promise. I don't have time to get to every take every episode because I get about 30 or 40 every week. We've only got room for five on the show, but don't think they don't go unnoticed. I do really appreciate it. So thank you. And of course, you can email us at contact@WTF1.com as well. All the hot takes get forwarded on to me. And we've got a real blend of Instagram, Twitter, and emails today coming in for the five on this week's episode. So once our takes have been sent through, me and our guest, in this case, the lovely Eddie, will have a little bit of a back and forth chat about them. And in the end, we will score them on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being that we strongly disagree and 5 being that we strongly agree with the take. Now, Ellie, are you going to play on hard difficulty, which means you're only allowed to use the free rating on one out of these 5 takes?
Of course I am. I'm not going to shy away from the challenge. So yeah, let's do it.
Love it. I love it. No one's turned that down yet. I do love the fact that people like to play on this difficulty and not sit on the fence. We like that on this show. So, Ellie, you ready for Hot Takes Wednesday?
Let's go. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Take number one comes from Jonathan Holden from the realm of Twitter, or whatever Elon Musk wants to call it this week. He says, Haas selling to Andretti would be best for everyone. They will never be anything other than a backmarker team. They've showed less progression in the 8 years they've been racing than Williams in the last 8 months. Hiya, that is spicy. That is very hot. One more time. Haas selling to Andretti will be best for everyone. They will never be anything other than a backmarker team. They've shown less progression in the 8 years they've been racing than Williams in the last 8 months. So, Ellie, what was your first impression when you suddenly saw that one?
Well, harsh, I think, but you know, there's quite a lot to unpack here. We've got kind of 3 points, I guess, to talk about. We've got the Andretti side of things, Haas being a backmarker, and also comparing them to Williams as well. So I think, yeah, lots to kind of get through. I think with Andretti, you know, it's been a big topic, and they're, you know, a very big name in motorsport. In terms of Haas themselves, we can't deny they have been a backmarker. I don't think anyone's going to be outraged in terms of that part of the statement.
Definitely not.
It's true since they've entered, you know, they've had so many challenges. I mean, we see it in DTS. The amount that they're featured is probably a sign they could literally have their own series with all of their struggles and their performances and things. I think, unfortunately, they probably will always be a backmarker. They've struggled to perform kind of in the midfield, particularly in the last sort of recent seasons. You know, P9 at the moment in the constructors. So I think that part of it is not that controversial. Haas are a backmarker. in terms of, you know, selling to Andretti, this has been like a topic of conversation for quite a long time.
Yeah.
They've resisted it. It's, you know, Gene has said that he doesn't want to, you know, sell over the team and things. But I think, you know, it makes sense. They're a back marker. It's possible that if they were backed by them, you know, fresh perspective, resources, financial, technical, so many things. I think obviously the financial side in F1 is huge. And if they could get an injection of cash from Andretti, then kind of why not? You know, they need to do something different, basically. So I think, yeah, that side of things, I'm definitely agreeing with. In terms of Williams, you know, it's interesting. Different histories. You've got Haas, newer team. Williams, you know, such a, you know, long history in F1. Especially recently, I think if we're looking like short term, Williams are doing well. Like they had an impressive Grand Prix if we're looking at this weekend. So yeah, definitely. I think if we're comparing the two teams this year, especially Williams are, you know, in terms of their, you know, where their team's doing, they're smashing it compared to Haas. So yeah, I'm thinking this take is not too controversial, and I'm definitely like leaning towards agreeing with this one.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways to skin this cat, so to speak. It's weird with Haas because they were actually a stronger team when they first got into F1, where they were genuinely scoring points on a pretty regular basis. They were around that sort of midfield 4-6 sort of area amongst the teams. And as time has gone on, I think they've gotten worse. And I think the Williams comparison is a little bit harsh. And the reason why I say that is because Haas has about 250 staff members. Williams has about 900. James Vowell spoke very eloquently about that last week when the topic came up on Sky. He had definitely rehearsed that speech. But he mentioned that he had 900 members of staff working for Williams. That's so much more in terms of resources. I've been lucky enough to visit Grove and see Williams, and it is an enormous facility. They've just massively underperformed through the years compared to what I think they are potentially capable of. In regards to Haas and Andretti, I agree. It would solve a lot of problems if Haas were to sell. Look, I'm going to cut the BS on this one. Formula One doesn't want 11 teams. It's more than obvious they don't want 11 teams. They would embrace Andretti with open arms. This is a bid that is one of the biggest racing names in America. It's got General Motors backing, one of the biggest car manufacturers in the world. There's no good reason for me that Formula One shouldn't be kicking the door down to having an American team join. And let's be honest, Haas is not really all that American. It's got its bases in Banbury. There's a lot of Italian backing in there as well. This is a proper American team as well. Biggest names in the business, massive car manufacturer. And Andretti's tried to buy a team out already. They tried to buy out Sauber a couple of years ago and it didn't work out. And Audi instead have now bought that team and are going to be the Audi team in a couple of years' time. It would solve a lot of problems. Formula One gets to keep its 10 teams. Haas gets the backing of two massive names, Andretti's resources, General Motors' resources. And I'm sure in the short to medium term, it would help them. Just one problem. The teams don't want to sell. They know how valuable their place on the grid is now worth. The sport wants to protect them. If you've read any reports out there about, like, for example, Forbes value in F1 at like something like $17 billion now, it's silly money what we're talking. And then Alpine valued themselves at about $800 million the other day when they sold a quarter of their team off to basically every famous athlete under the sun now. You may have seen the new crop that came through last week: Anthony Joshua, Pat Mahomes, Travis Kelce. I've got him, Taylor Swift's boyfriend, etc. They gave the game away. Like, Alpine values themselves at about $800 million. And it's only going to go up if the value of the sport goes up. So if you're someone like a Gene Haas, you probably don't want to sell your spot right now, because it's rare that sports franchises go down in value. They only go up. And F1's in generally in a good place right now. So I agree with the perspective that I think if Haas was truly adamant about wanting to win and wanting to climb the field, maybe giving up a degree of control and letting Andretti and General Motors come in would probably suit everybody. But unfortunately, I don't think they will for that financial reason, because if you're selling your team, you're hopping off the roller coaster as it's only going up in terms of value, and you don't want to do that, ideally. So I agree with the take, though. I do agree. I don't think it will happen, but I agree with the perspective of where it is. Haas have struggled for a little while. They've tracked down more than up in recent years. They barely survived the pandemic. It's not ideal. They need something to come from somewhere in terms of a shot in the arm, whether it be financially, whether it be a new owner, or whatever it is. They need the help, because, I mean, if you saw this past weekend, AlphaTauri getting 5 points from Yuki Tsunoda finishing eighth was massive for the team. They're only 2 points behind Haas now. That fight for eighth is going to be massive. So overall, I agree with the take. I think it would be the best thing for all parties, except for Gunther Steiner. So I'm going to say four, Jonathan, for your take on that one. I agree for the most part that I think selling would probably be best, but they're not going to want to do that. It's too lucrative. That's the problem. Ellie, like, what's your gut telling you on this one? Give me a score.
Like you say, in terms of like the financial side of stuff, like it would be great if we did see it. And who knows, if they got pushed to that point, then perhaps they would revisit it. You know,
let me just say on the record, I am all for an 11th team. I am all, I cannot stress this enough, that F1's politics is nonsense. Give me 11 teams. We can have 12. There's no good reason why we can't have 12. Carry on, Eddie. Sorry, I had to make that point just to avoid any confusion.
I don't think it will happen. You know what F1 are like with regulations and things. It'd be great to see Andretti, like you say, the links, you know, with the US and Haas being an American team. But going on to the take, I think I agree with the take, and I've actually gone for a four as well. I think it would be great to see. Do I think it will happen? Probably not.
You have 3 United States Grand Prix now. You will pump every promotional tool you can get into this show. DTS's biggest audience is the United States of America, but if you want a team from there, no, can't have that. This sport is nonsense sometimes. Give me Andretti. I want an 11th team, okay? F1 has been silly for this, and I cannot stress that point enough on this show. I just wanted to get that. I'm going to make my stance on this absolutely clear to avoid any and all confusion. So, yeah, I'm all for an 11th team. I hope it's Andretti. I hope it's anybody that has the feasible ways of getting a team on the grid, because we can have 12, so why can't we have 12? I think there's a lot of greed and a lot of politics at play at that, and I don't like it, but hey, it is what it is. Right, this is a Hot Takes Wednesday first. One person has got 2 successful takes on the show. I've never done this before, but they were both so good, they're both going to be on the show. So I'll address the first one, and then we'll come back to the second one later. It's from Marcin Zygmunt, who always sends in fantastic takes. I think I've mentioned him 4 or 5 times on this show since I started hosting it back in January. Always brings good stuff to the table. And here's another one. Quote, sprint formats must be changed. They were created to bring excitement, but they're the most boring part of the weekend. Wow. The FIA should go all the way in the entertainment direction. It's only for 8 points. It won't impact the championship fight, but it will give backmarkers a chance to make a difference and will truly spice up the sprint. I just want to point out, I had to cut this down. It was 2 tweets worth of explanations about this because, pardon me for a second, I had a bit of a cough there. A lot of people sent in sprint-related takes off the back of what happened at COTA. And I might actually save some for a How to Save the Sprint special or something along those lines, because there was a whole heap of different suggestions about how to improve things. I did read them all. Thanks for that. I might come back and save them at a later point, but I just wanted to make that clear that, so Marcin's take one more time. Sprint formats must be changed. They're created to bring in excitement, but they're the most boring part of the weekend. FIA should go all the way in the entertainment direction. It's only for 8 points. It won't impact the championship fight, but it will give backmarkers a chance to make a difference and will truly spice up the sprint. How do you feel on this one, Eddie?
Gosh, again, a lot to unpack. I think, like you said, you could genuinely have a whole series on people's opinions on the sprint and the format and everything. I think, you know, we're noticing...
What's your gut feed on the sprint in general, then?
It's that word, isn't it? Boring. And I think, like, I don't know if I'd say it was boring. I just don't... My gut instinct is that it doesn't work. As it, you know, I'm not sure. I kind of have that sigh when you know it's a sprint weekend rather than excited. I'm like, oh, it's another sprint weekend. They're just
say how I feel about it.
Yeah, I think
it's too safe. I've said this on other places on my other podcast. If you guys follow me on a more personal level on M101, I've said it there too. I think it's too safe. I think it's too similar to the Grand Prix that we already have. And I think that's why a lot of people didn't feel great about this Grand Prix on Sunday morning, because Max had dominated that sprint so thoroughly that they just thought he was going to run away with it. Turns out we actually got a much more captivating Grand Prix in the end, because you never know what happened on Sunday. But even Max was like, I think it gives part of the game away. Max has always been anti-sprint, always. So I think it's too safe. I don't like the fact that the best part of the weekend, qualifying, in my opinion, is now on a Friday afternoon, Friday evening sort of slot. I think that's annoying. I just think it's too safe. I don't know how you feel about it, Ellie, by comparison, but that's how I've always looked at it. I think you can see where I'm going with this. I massively agree with this take. I wanted to at least get some context behind it first. So, I mean, again, how do you feel about it? Do you think there's a way it could be improved?
I think it's, like you say, it's almost similar. But then when we look at the points, with only 8 points for a win, from then, you know, a driver's point of view, how is it almost as prestigious to win? It's not like Oscar obviously won the sprint, but is it the same as winning a race? No. But then it's effectively the same setup, just shortened. And I just don't think it does enough to, you know, it's probably intended to give other teams a chance to showcase in that shorter kind of simulation rather than a long race. But does it do that? No. Like you said, we just basically get a little starter to the weekend. We probably get the same pretty much layout, Max winning. So it's, yeah, the anticipation's gone. It's just effectively a practice with a few points, I think, assigned to it.
I remember Logan Sargeant describing that back in Baku as exactly that. It was like, look, I have no chance of coming in eighth. And that's which is where the points cutoff starts off. I've got no chance of making the top eight. So for us, it's a glorified test session.
Yeah.
I think it was actually worse in the original format, because I used to nickname it. I used to say, because I remember when the sprint first came along, it would set the grid for the Grand Prix on the Sunday. And yeah. I used to say, congrats, you've now made the Grand Prix a 400-kilometer race with a red flag at 25% distance. Congratulations. It's not so bad now because the sprint is obviously standalone, but I still... For me, and again, I'll get into some of these maybe in a future episode about some of the suggestions some of you guys think. Some of them are very, very good, and I'm more than prepared to get them on at some point. I think it's time for reverse grids. It feels like I'm opening Pandora's box when talking about this, because I think a lot of people in F1, they mention reverse grids, and then all of a sudden it's like someone's just seen a ghost. It's like, is F1 ready for that? Like, because I think that might be the only way you can save this. You reverse some degree of the grid, like Formula 2 does. I think it's the first 10 they reverse for the sprint or the sprint race compared to the feature. I think it's time we entertain that part of the conversation, because I'm not sure what else you could do to save this. What do you think? Do you think the F1 in general should go all the way in on this? Because I think if you're talking about going all in for entertainment, that's one of the ways you do it, surely.
I just don't know whether it's maybe the frequency now that we have more sprint.
Six,
It just kind of, you know, devalues this thing that's meant to be more exciting and providing like a different way to interact with F1. I mean, we all love racing, but we don't enjoy this extra bit of it. So I think that's saying something. And with the drivers as well, you know, being very vocal, they don't like the sprint. So I don't know why we're still doing it. If the fans and the drivers don't like it, then it definitely needs to be revisited. Now that we have, you know, the shootout as well, effectively Saturdays are a different event to Sundays. And I think it's always been about, as you say, the exciting bit is the quali and then the anticipation is for the Sunday. So I just think it's almost like an added layer of entertainment that doesn't really add the entertainment, I guess.
Yeah, my theory is they've done it to get more people to watch on a Friday.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people will just skip out of practice, which is understandable. It's practice. It's not meant to be exciting. As much as people love watching race cars go around, you will never convince me that practice is something that should be on TV. That's just me, personally.
I love practice.
Well, we disagree on something. But me personally, I've always vouched for like thinning down practice time, for example. I don't think you need 3 hours of it, personally. I think putting the teams more on... That's the one thing I do like about the sprint format. Only having an hour of practice, it puts more pressure on the teams to get their setups right straight away, because as this weekend proved, you get it wrong and there can be controversy and rule breaking, etc., which we'll get to a little bit later on in the show. But I think to circle it back a little bit towards Marsan's take in general, I've only done this, I think, once before on the history of me as a host on Hot Takes Wednesday. I'm saying 5. I don't break out the 5 very often, but I 100% agree with you, Marsan. I think if you're going to have the sprint, which they're not going to get rid of, it makes them too much money. We as F1 fans will watch anything. If you're listening to this podcast, chances are you watch everything on an F1 weekend. That's probably just the way you're going about it. You're a hardcore fan. You will watch anything. You're more likely to watch your favorite part if it's on Friday. You watch more over a weekend. Chances are it's better than practice. They're not going to get rid of it. So go all the way with it. Put points down to maybe 15th place. Give the smaller teams more of an incentive to go for it, maybe. And also, yeah, like, reverse the grids. I'm all for that. Like, you know, it's... Some people will say it's too contrived and too gimmicky, which I can understand. There's certainly an argument for that, but if you're going to try and improve the show, go for it. Go all the way with it. Don't, because what this is still too safe. It's too similar to the Grand Prix. And you're not going to get people to get behind this idea if you're just going to have a shortened version of the Grand Prix that already exists. That's how I look at it. So I'm going to say 5. And I never go 5 on this show, but I fully agree with you, Marsan, 100%. How do you feel about it, Annie?
I mean, maybe I'm more ballsy because I'm not on every week, but I actually wrote down a 5 for this one. I just think if you ask anyone, they're not going to disagree. Sprints need to be changed. The format needs to be changed. So yeah, I've gone for a 5.
A double 5.
Yeah.
I think that's only the second time in the 9 months I've been hosting this show that both of us have gone for a 5. That is a unicorn. Ellie, you've made some history on Hot Takes Wednesday. You're welcome back anytime.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Take number 3 comes from Abby Woodard, who emailed the show from Oklahoma City. Oh, love to see, love the American audience. Always say such nice things about us. So thanks, Abby, and thanks to all the American listeners out there. We love you. She sent in saying, Dre, I've got a take for you. If it wasn't for his big personality, Daniel Ricciardo's career would be cold in the ground. Now, I also want to give a shout out to Devil's Beans Coffee, who's also sending something very similar on Twitter. I feel it was only fair to mention them both because it was all very, very similar in how it was worded. But yeah, if it wasn't for his big personality, Daniel Ricciardo's career would be cold in the ground. So this argument, is Ricciardo's personality the only thing that's keeping him in the job? How do you feel about it, Elle?
Don't like it.
I don't like it either, for what it's worth, but
oh gosh, yeah, again, there's this one is harsh. I feel it is harsh, but if I'm looking at it impartially, I mean, we all love Daniel Ricciardo. Like, who doesn't love him? He's one of the most charismatic people in F1. He's got that trademark grin. You know, he invented the shoey. He's a fan favorite. Everyone adores him. So no one wants to read a take like this, but, you know, that's the point. They're controversial. I think, you know, there's two ways to look at it. There's definitely, you know, we look at the driving talent. He's proven himself. He obviously has talent. You don't stay in F1 without talent. You're not just there for your personality. 2014, you know, amazing season with Red Bull, outperformed Sebastian Vettel, obviously four-time world champion. He's a race winner. He's had podiums for Renault, McLaren. Like, it's not, I don't think it's fair to just say he's here for his personality.
Mm.
You know, he's got a great reputation. Obviously, now he's been in the sport for years. But, you know, there was a time where he had the reputation for being one of the best overtakers, for late braking. He was amazing to watch on track. I think then, if we look at the personality side, I do agree. There's no denying that personality can affect someone's time in F1. You know, in terms of marketability, he's the best. Like, for the fan base, for sponsorship deals, etc., it's great to have him in the sport. That definitely probably has, you know, had an advantage on his time in the sport, the longevity of it. So I think, yeah, personality is definitely a factor of why he's been around so long. However, like, at its core, F1 is about performance. Like, he's not just there for no reason. Personality played a role, but yeah, I'm saying that talent is basically why he's been retained on the grid for so long.
I fully agree. I think the good of Daniel Ricciardo's career has far outweighed the bad. I think he is the biggest reason why Red Bull has got so much driver controversy around it right now, because they were never able to replace Ricciardo after he left that team in 2018. He was the only person that they've had since then that has been able to keep reasonably close to Verstappen in their time together as teammates. Mm. They tried Albon. Didn't work. They tried Gasly. That really didn't work. And now Perez is under pressure as we speak. What I would say is that his personality absolutely helps. I mean, there will always be a value in being a quote-unquote media darling, quote-unquote fan favorite. I completely agree with the sentiment that you've said, Al, he's a very marketable person. I've said it before. I think he's been the biggest winner of the Drive to Survive boom. Because Hamilton doesn't play a massive role in the show. Verstappen literally boycotted it for several years before coming back last year. And they already have massive profiles of their own. I would argue Ricciardo, who has been heavily featured in a lot of seasons of the show, has probably been its biggest winner. But I don't think, and to reflect what you said, Al, I don't think Christian Horner, when he was making the decision to move on from Nyck de Vries earlier on this year, was like, well, Ricciardo will get all the DTS girls in, all the DTS fans in. Because, I mean, I say DTS girls because that's exactly how Horner described it earlier this year, which didn't go down well. I'm speaking in context here. It's not what I actually think. That's literally what he said. But I don't think he was making those key decisions with that thought in mind. Red Bull is a massive company. It's worth multiple billions of pounds, like, not so much as an energy drink supplier, but just because of the amount of marketing they already pull. They're everywhere. Their influence in sport is enormous. How many sport events don't have Red Bull predominantly featured in it somewhere? Not many. Like, they have owned that space for many, many times. They don't need the help of Daniel Ricciardo. They've already got that more than covered. So what I was going to say is, it's very much a sport of what have you done for me lately. I was shocked. I saw three or four different Daniel Ricciardo based takes in my inbox this week, maybe because of his Coda drive and his first weekend back. And again, His car had damage for most of that race. It wasn't on him as to why he was so slow. But I'm surprised people have turned so quickly on Daniel. The McLaren time for me was an outlier more than it was the norm of his career. But I get it. The sport moves very quickly. It's a what have you done for me lately kind of sport. I get why McLaren bought him out. They've been vindicated because Oscar Piastri has been so good. Annoyingly, Zak Brown probably made the right call on that, as harsh as it may sound. I don't think Ricciardo's there just because he's a personality. I think his personality only enhances the fact that he's a damn good racing driver. I've said it on this show before. He's got 8 F1 wins, and I'd argue that not one of them he was in the best car for. That is quite the achievement. I remember his last year at Renault was so, so good. He was, you know, in the top five almost every weekend. He was ridiculous. I know what he's capable of in a car. And I think the whole point of Red Bull is that they've tried to untangle what went wrong for him at McLaren and try to get him back to what he was when he was part of Red Bull in the first place. And unfortunately, they've lost 5 race weekends where they could have done that because of his injury, which hasn't helped either. So it's all been a bit messy at Red Bull, not through entirely of their own making, but I don't think Ricciardo's personality is a crutch for his career. I think it's the opposite. I think the platform he's given himself has helped out, but I don't think that Ricciardo would be off the grid without it. I think it certainly helps, but I still think he's a very solid racing driver. And I often tell people, well, if you're not getting in Ricciardo, who would you bring in instead? And no, don't say Liam Lawson now just because you've seen him drive for 5 weekends. That's not fair. Yeah, I'm going to say 2. I said 2 on my notes here because, okay, he's not had the best run of form for the last couple of years, so I'm not going to say it's a 1. I can see why people might come to that conclusion. But I think if you take Ricciardo's career as a whole, he's deserved the benefit of the doubt for how he's gotten to this point. That's how I look at it. How about you, Eddie? How you scored it?
I've actually gone for a 3, so I'm using my special for this one. I think
fair enough.
I would love to say that it was completely about, you know, he's about for his performance, and yes, that is a massive factor, but I think there is a bit in there about personality and keeping him around for so long. I don't think his career would be cold in the ground, as Abby puts it, but it is a factor, so I'm gonna go kind of on the fence and go for a 3.
That's fair enough. Look, I get the argument. It's why I went 2. I disagree with it, but I could see why some people have drawn that conclusion. What I would say in general is, come back to me at the end of the season, and I'll see if I still feel the same way. Because we've got four race weekends left. It'll take his sample size up to 7. Then we'll get a better idea of where he's at. But right now, I think it's too quick to say that Ricciardo's cooked entirely as a driver. I know the McLaren run was rough, but everywhere else he's excelled. So I think it's only fair we give him a bigger chance to see where he's truly at as a driver. Maybe McLaren really did do him in. We'll have to wait and see. you know, but so we'll see how we go on that one. So here's Marsan's second take of the episode. I mentioned this earlier. This is going to be a fun one. If 50% or more of randomly selected cars failed the post-race inspection, more, or possibly all of the cars, should be investigated. Now, I'm going to add a little bit of context here, because this is obviously in direct reference to Hamilton and Leclerc's disqualification from the race itself, because their floors were down to beyond a legal limit. You're allowed 9 millimeters of the plank under your car for it to be legal. Anything less than that, you're in breach of the regs, and if it's a technical regulation, it's a DQ. No questions asked, no appeals, no nothing. If your car is illegal, it's excluded. Simple as that. Now, I believe this has come up because it was revealed when people reports that only 4 cars had their floors tested. The other 2 were Verstappen and Norris, who finished 1st and 2nd after the penalties, their floors were legal. Now, Elle wanted me to take this one a little bit first, and I'll put my 2 cents in for this one. Scrutineering is hard. is my first overall point here. They've got to pack these cars up and ship them off to the next race the following morning. Like Mexico, they've got to be there Monday morning for them to start building up the paddock, preparing for the Grand Prix weekend. And Ellie, I think, did you know before I told you before we started recording that the technical regulation book for F1 is 183 pages long?
No, I have had before. I've tried to have a read through, but it's actually really hard to find the info that you want from it. So not that long, I didn't know.
It's not exactly 50 Shades of Grey, is it? Like, it's not exactly what you call compelling reading material. I'm not sure 50 Shades of Grey is either. I've never read it. I just thought I'd pluck out a famous book as an example. That's one for you adult listeners out there. Be careful if you Google it. I don't think the average fan would ever read an FIA technical delegate report under normal circumstances. Like, it's just something that you assume that cars are legal when they run. And you're not going to throw that entire book at every single car, every single race weekend. You can't do it. There's not enough time to be able to do that properly. It's not like Le Mans, where there's like one big event every year and you're going to take the time to make sure every car is compliant. I remember that came up in the NMP2 class this year, where the class winner only got the official result on the Thursday. It took them 4 days to go through the results. So, You can't have that in F1. You can't have a final result on the Thursday of the next race weekend. That's crazy. That's far too long to leave it all up in the air, you know. So, like a science experiment, you take a sample size. That's entirely fair. Like, it's, you know, that's how polling works. You don't take the full amount. You take a sample. Because the results tend to reflect a greater picture. That's generally how polling works. So I largely, personally, am fine with this, the way the FIA does it. It makes sense. Like I've said before, scrutineering is done in good faith. The way the sport is run is in good faith, because if it wasn't run in good faith and we accused everybody of cheating every 2 seconds, we'd be stripping down every single car every race weekend and making sure it completely follows the book. You can't do that. It's not a realistic thing to do in motorsport. So generally speaking, I'm fine with it. However, I can understand the logic in this take. I can. Like, for me, it's like the question of how long is a piece of string? Like, what would you consider a fair test? And I don't know what the number is on that. Is it 4 cars out of 20? Is it 10 cars out of 20? Is it the entire field? And I say this, Al, to put you in a bit of a logic puzzle here. If they'd have randomly tested 4 other cars and they all came up fine, would we be even having this conversation?
Oh gosh, that's so much to unpack. I think I agree with you about, I think 4 is a good amount to test. I think if we, you know, look at other sports, we've had the introduction of things like VAR, but you know, we bring it in to be fair, and obviously that's a pro. We want fairness. Technically, you know, they could check every car and that would be the fairest thing, but is that logistically possible? Probably not. So I think, you know, it's good that we have, you know, these regulations. Obviously they need to complete like fairly and adhere to these. You know, pros, yeah, fairness. We know like that all the cars are legal, but as you've touched on, like logistically there'd be so many challenges to this. There'd be delays when we've got, you know, double headers, triple headers. It's probably not possible, you know. And then also, yeah, linking to things like VAR, like we don't want the sport to always be relying so heavily on these sort of like witch hunts and like trying to find something wrong with every single car. So I think
which is what football is right now. Let's be real. like VAR hates my team, or the ref is biased against my team. How many times do you hear that when football conversations come up these days? It happens all the time. I think you're absolutely spot on with the VAR comparison. With football, I think we were prepared to accept to a degree that human error is a massive part of that game.
Yeah, definitely.
And we weren't okay with that, hence why VAR was brought in. And now we're finding out that, hang on, maybe we were actually okay with this a little bit. Sometimes the ref is allowed to make a mistake every once in a while.
For sure.
Who knows?
There's a level. And I think that's why, in terms of checking the cars afterwards, probably checking four of the cars is, you know, a decent amount. We don't want it to become too much, I think. So I'm not sure about the 50%. I see the reasoning, you know, again, increasing the sample size, technically that's fairer, but logistically, I think probably, yeah, four cars is probably the right amount.
Yeah, it's worth pointing out this process is completely at random. Some elements of the car, all the cars get checked. Some of them, it's only a sample size. For example, during that same weekend, the aero parts were checked on Perez, Norris's, and I think it was Yuki Tsunoda's car as an example. They only tested 3 out of 20. They were all compliant. We all move on. And I think a lot of this is perception. I think perception is 9/10 of the law in this argument. If we tested 4 random cars and they all came up fine, we're not having a big conversation about whether this should be legal, whether this process is legal, whether it's fair or not. It doesn't even enter our minds. But the fact that 2 out of 4 came up, I don't think it's a huge leap of logic to say, well, okay, if 2 out of 4 have come up illegal, yeah, maybe more have come up that way. I get it. I'm not dismissing that argument, which is why, spoiler alert, I'm going to say 3 on this one, because you can every argument can be countered fairly. Because you could say on one side, 2 out of 4 came up illegal. You should probably test more to see if more people broke this rule. On the other hand, you could also say, well, why are you assuming that everybody else is going to run their cars the same way? I think they're both equally valid arguments. Just because Hamilton's car was illegal doesn't mean that George Russell's is going to be as well. They could have different setups. They could have ran their cars differently. The sport generally has the attitude of innocent until proven guilty. Because if it was the other way around, scrutineering would take 15 days. We'd find out about Logan Sargeant's Abu Dhabi car sometime in pre-season testing the following April. So you've got to draw the line somewhere. So I'm going to say 3 on this one. I think you could easily go either way on this, but I also think a lot of the theory behind this thinking is based on what ifs. What if this car is legal? What if this car is legal? What if this one is illegal? And I think people, to borrow a football pun like you did, Al, move the goalposts a little bit, depending on how this turned out. Because like I said, if we tested 4 different cars, and the floors were legal, Hamilton and Leclerc would have had an illegal car, and we would have never have known. That's... Teams are okay. Like, the thing is, the threat of being DQ'd is enough for teams to not even try to consider breaking these rules intentionally. And people have... this is why I don't call it cheating. Because I don't think Mercedes had the intent to cheat. I think, you know, they just got caught out by the format. You know, I don't think they were going, well, we're going to run this car so low it's going to take the barge boards off and we'll see what happens. If you get clapped for that, you're out. You know, you've cost yourself, your whole weekend was for nothing. So for me, I'm fine with it the way it is, but I can see the argument. So I'm going to say 3. Elle, how do you feel about it score-wise?
Yeah, I mean, I've gone for 2. I kind of agree with you. It could go either way. I just think, you know, I know a lot of people that have been put off watching the sport in more recent years as they kind of feel that more rules have come in. It's getting a bit, you know, there's
political trust and all that.
There's no risk of making it, as I said earlier, like a witch hunt with these track limits. I get it. We're trying to make it as fair as possible. But I think, yeah, in terms of this statement, I think it's fine as it is. Like you say, it's random. The risk is big enough for teams. Of course, Lewis and Charles did not want to be disqualified.
Of course not.
So I've gone for a 2, I think, with this one.
It did lead to a hilarious Instagram collaboration picture you may have seen there a couple of days ago. It was like mood.
Yeah.
Well done, boys. Well handled. I must admit, I got a good laugh out of that. So well done, Lewis and Charles. If you haven't seen the Instagram, go out of your way to find it. You won't miss it. It's pretty funny. Final take of the episode comes from Daniel Dunderveld. And Daniel says, and it links back to the previous take, Hamilton's penalty has saved Perez's 2024 season. Very to the point. So we think that, as I said, Daniel, you think that Hamilton getting DQ'd, and obviously the two DQs bumped Perez up to fourth in the end, in the final result, has saved him from losing his job. And I think this is probably more to do with the fact that those two are fighting for second in the championship. I think the gap would have been 19 points if Hamilton's result had stood. I think it's now 39 because of how it's all shaken out. Once the maths was factored in, and obviously Hamilton lost his 18, Perez got another couple more because he got me moved up a couple of spots. I think I want to say it's 39 points now between the two in the fight for second. God, I'm good at maths. Look at me, look at me. Christian Horner literally said this weekend, Perez's job is not dependent on whether he finishes second in the standings or not.
Yeah,
because he didn't last year. It's easily forgotten. He was third last year. He lost that to Charles Leclerc. Didn't lose his job then. It was off the back of an extension he got off the Monaco where he won that race. Here's what I'll say. If you take Horner at his word, then this shouldn't be a problem. The problem is, do you take Christian Horner at his word? Absolutely not. The way Red Bull's treated their drivers over the years, like, they are ruthless. They have no problem making difficult decisions to cull people if they feel they're not good enough. What I would say is that watching this weekend, if you're one of the people that isn't convinced about Checo and him being in that Red Bull seat, this was not going to change your mind. I think Perez was very quiet this weekend. I think he was sixth on the road. You probably want a bit more from a car that's so good from your second driver. Opening up that kind of gap between you and the competition is not ideal when Max is doing so well. This isn't going to convince anybody that, oh, well, actually, no, Perez is fine. Yeah, he settled the ship. Like, fourth is all right, but you were nowhere near contending. I think he was 24 seconds behind Max by the time the race was over. You're not going to convince anybody, in my opinion, on this if you think that Perez deserves to stay where he is right now. But Elle, what's your general thoughts on the Perez situation? Do you think he should stay? Would this weekend help?
I think the statement, great name, by the way, Daniel. The statement is, you know, I don't think it's fair to say that just because of Hamilton's penalty, it's miraculously saved his season. I guess it comes down to whether his season technically needs saving. I think if you look at it objectively, if he finishes second in the driver's standings, how better could he perform? Like, no one's near Max, so of course Red Bull would want Perez to finish second. And if he does, then surely if you're looking at it objectively from that point of view, then his season didn't need saving. I get that, you know, there was, you know, a big gap and sometimes Perez is nowhere to be seen, but I think if we look at it at the end of the year, then how can we not say he's had a successful year? I get the car, you know, he maybe should be closer to Max, but no one is close to Max. Like, no one is anywhere near.
This is true.
I think he's doing a pretty good job. You know, he's not the loudest driver on the grid in terms of, like, we spoke earlier about personality, marketing and things like that. Maybe that plays a factor. He's quite quiet, I guess, in terms of...
He is Mexican and they are very passionate fans. We heard Max get booed on that podium. Now, to be fair, I think some of that was also for Greg Abbott. Doesn't take a lot of Googling to figure out why. That's all I will say, but... Every race weekend I go to, you will see Mexican fans in the stands everywhere. Perez has got a big following, and I think that's part of the reason why. I think that certainly helps out. Carry on. Just wanted to get that point.
Yeah, I think, like, and also you mentioned about Christian saying about his future. It's interesting because it is his word. He said it wasn't dependent on where he finished. I don't know if I agree with that. I think, you know, Perez will probably be very relieved to finish P2 in the driver's standings at the end of the year, because as I said, performance wise there's not much more he could have done in terms of securing his spot and things like that. So I think with the hot take, I don't think it's so much to do with just this weekend. Perez is a massive topic, like, especially this year, everyone's talking about him in terms of his future and etc. So I think it's not to do with Lewis's penalty and things like that. It's more to do with his general, I think, trajectory in the future. And it's just bloody hard with Max as your teammate, you know, to look even decent next to him. So I think, yeah, this is an interesting one, but I think I'm leaning more towards disagree with this take. I think he's done what he could, basically.
I'll tell you how I feel about it. I went one. I don't go one very often on this show either, but I've done it a bit more frequently. Because I don't think it's going to change anybody's perspectives on this. I think if you want Perez out of that seat, him going from ninth to fourth in the Grand Prix is not going to sway your opinion on that. Like, if that's the side of the fence you've chosen to sit on, like, this was a fine weekend for Perez, but it's not going to blow anybody away, right? And if you want to give Perez the benefit of the doubt and keep him in, this was fine. Fourth place is, you know, a solid result. It's 12 points. It's not dreadful. He's had far worse weekends than this one. I was doing the WTF1 wrap on Sunday, and the audience that we had for that, they were adamant to knock Perez down from B tier to C tier. And I was like, guys, this was nowhere near his worst weekend. Like, I was just like, what, really? Are we that harsh on him now? He's had far worse days than this one. I think it was just a middle of the road weekend for him. So I don't. That's why I've gone one, because I just disagree with the premise of the text saying, "Oh well, because Hamilton's now DQ'd and you know he's got a 39-point cushion for second that it saved his job." I don't think him falling to third would have cost anybody his job, because I remember there were seasons when Sebastian Vettel beat Valtteri Bottas, and no one was calling for Bottas's head to the level that we're doing now for Checo. And that was despite Mercedes having a very, very good car in back then too. So I think I'm not saying there isn't an argument to move Perez on. I think there's a very strong one you can certainly make. And I think the whole idea of bringing Ricciardo back in and getting some extended time out of Liam Lawson was to set yourself up and see potentially if there is a future for anybody else in your umbrella. But I don't think this is going to suddenly swing anybody's opinion, because they'll just say, well, Hamilton would have finished second if it wasn't for the 18 points he was robbed of in at COTA. I know how some of these fans get down on the internet, so it's that's how I look at it. So I've gone one. How do you feel about it, Elle? Let's wrap this up.
I went for two. I'm kind of on the same line as you, I think.
Sure.
Interestingly, as you say about Bottas, he was doing the same. P2, that's all they kind of, the best they could ask for him in comparison to Lewis. Why is it not the same for Perez? So I think, yeah, this weekend didn't have a massive impact on his sort of longevity and future and all the conversation surrounding it. So I think, yeah, two for me. It's definitely an interesting topic. And I'm, yeah, in the future, it'll be super interesting to see what happens with him and his career and everything.
Well, I mean, it's a big name team and a big name seat. If he doesn't get it, there will be ripple effects. There will be shockwaves sent down the sport. There will be consequences up and down the grid. So, yeah, there will always be fascinating. It always is when a big seat has a move around. So I think out of the big seats that are out there, if Perez is the one that's moved on, there'll be conversations held. There'll be people looking at the situation and going, Lando Norris in purple. Just a thought. That'll do it for this edition of Hot Takes Wednesday. Elle, tell the good people where they can find you. Give yourself a little plug. Tell the good people what you got going on in the world.
I love that little promo. I am on TikTok, so you can find me at Elle Profit, and the same on Instagram as well, for all things F1, tech, and all that sciencey kind of stuff that I absolutely love. You can check me out on there and give me a follow.
Give her a little bump from us at Hot Takes Wednesday. Tell her Dre sent you. Put in a good word. It never hurts. Big thanks to Elle for coming on as always. A delightful guest. And we'll be back next week for another edition of HDW right after the Mexican Grand Prix. Checo, give us a good weekend. I don't have to talk about you on the show for 3 weeks in a row. Give us a podium. Give us something. All right? Until then, I've been Dre Harris, achieving any profit. Until next time, thank you very much for listening. Take care. Sayonara.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.